Well, in some ways, we're living in a boom time for news, as you can hear, with more access than ever to the big stories of our time, the global pandemic, the protests in America, the sports riots and so on. But what if you want to check up on what's happening in your community? Maybe the footy score of your local team or the plans the council has for that big empty lot across the street. Where do you go for that news? The answer used to be the local paper. But across Australia, hundreds of those have closed down, some moving to digital only, others merging with regional or metro mastheads, and with them, some argue, went a part of civic life. So what comes next? And are there new models on the horizon? I'm going to canvass thoughts from three guests. Eric Beecher is best described as a media entrepreneur, now chairman of Private Media and publisher of Crikey, with a long career as editor and publisher of major dailies and of small suburban newspapers and everything in between. Genevieve Jacobs is a journalist and the group editor of Regional Media, which covers news in southeast New South Wales, Canberra and surrounds. And in Warrnambool in Victoria is journalist and author Carol Altman, who runs a one-woman community news operation called The Terrier from her front room. And I welcome them all.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Eric Beecher, a micro question first. Do you have a local or community paper where you live and do you read it?
I live in the inner suburbs of Melbourne, and the answer is I'm not sure because it never gets delivered.
But you haven't seen it, you know, mouldering away on some site, you know, near the local supermarket or anything?
No, but if I go back 20 years, I used to own it, so I
know
I think it still exists.
I used to write for it, actually. Okay, so the question is, it seems to us here that one day there was a local paper there in print form available on my doorstep and at the butcher shop, and the next day it wasn't. I mean, where did those papers go, Eric?
So all of this stuff really gets back to one thing, which is the funding model for journalism, and we're talking here about, you know, news, public interest journalism. And the funding model for that journalism, whether it's local or national, has collapsed, and it's collapsed because advertising revenue, which was the primary source of that funding, has moved from what used to be newspapers and even websites to Google, Facebook and lots of other places. And so the funds aren't there to pay for the journalism.
So what is hanging on for grim death in the bigger aspects of this operation is just really hit those small ones, which was, you're saying, an accident waiting to happen, really.
Yeah, it was an accident waiting to happen, I guess. I mean, none of us really predicted how it would happen. But, you know, the 100, 150-year model of the print newspaper was always, because it was so profitable at its peak, was always vulnerable to a better mousetrap, and particularly a better digital mousetrap, and that's exactly what happened.
Could it have been prevented then? Could this particular latest collapse have been prevented?
Not really. And if you look around the world at digital alternatives to the local printed newspaper, there are very few examples, if we're talking about suburban or regional, there are very few examples that have worked at scale. So the smaller one, two-person little newsrooms in regional and suburban areas, absolutely, there's a model there because the cost structure is so low. But if you want to cover particularly in cities or bigger suburbs or whatever, if you want to cover the councils and the police and corruption and sport and everything else in between, it's really hard to do that comprehensively with one or two reporters.
I want to read you something that Guy Rundle wrote recently in Crikey, which is pretty startling and confronting to someone like me who's made a career of journalism. Journalism, by taking a somewhat demarketized view of itself, has obscured the conditions of its production and started to judge its winnowing in terms of the myth it's told about itself, that it is something people desperately want but are now being actively denied. The hard truth is that a lot of the journalism that people like us, writers and readers of this publication, regard as crucial, was never profitable on its own terms and piggybacked on the supply limits created by the dominance of physical printing. So have we been just doing something that people didn't want?
It's really the scale of how many people wanted it. I don't actually think that's so much the issue, because the importance of covering a regional area is no less important to the people in that area, even though there aren't that many of them, if you see what I mean. Mm. So I don't think scale of audience is necessarily a correlation for the importance and indeed often the quality of the journalism.
Yes, but in a way we have thought that there was a critical mass of people who really, really cared about being informed. And one's wondering if that's the case.
Well, even though Guy wrote that piece in Crikey, he doesn't. We don't have a single point of view, and I don't happen to agree with that part of what he wrote. I actually think that the importance of journalism goes beyond the size of the audience, and the size of the audience in any case is still pretty significant. Look at the ABC. Look at the size of the ABC website audience.
Like, but it doesn't have to turn a profit, you see. That's the point.
No, it doesn't have to turn a profit, but that's a different argument.
Yeah, all right. I just think this is something that really has been preoccupying me. Genevieve Jacobs, you're the editor of About Regional. This is this digital site that covers southeast New South Wales, Canberra and surrounds. And you actually have some criticisms of the old-style community paper. You feel a lot of them were declining because they had lost their way. How so?
Well, Geraldine, Region Media is the organisation that's sort of the masthead for all of this, for which I'm the group editor. I think I'm going to cry heresy to Guy Rundle, and I actually agree with Eric there. I think there's been a truly invidious set of circumstances that's unfolded over the last 20 years or so. A lot of small print operations felt the pinch a couple of decades ago. I started as a journalist in 1987 on the Cootamundra Herald. They sold out to the rural presses of this world. Money was saved by centralising the printing presses, syndicating the content, staffing the mastheads with inexperienced junior journalists. And that just ripped to shreds the exact precise reasons why people valued their rural and regional papers in the beginning, because much of the value of the local trust and the connection and the deep understanding of local stories had been gutted from those mastheads. And, you know, I look now, I'm married to a farmer at Cootamundra. I look at our local papers by comparison with what they were when I started back in 1987 as a bright-eyed cadet. The depth has entirely evaporated. The depth of the coverage, the understanding of the issues, the connection with the community has just disappeared because there's been this relentless decade upon decade of cutting to the bone that's removed the rationale for the papers in the first place.
So you've changed your model. You've opted for something very different. Who is your readership and what are they getting from you that they're not getting elsewhere?
So our readership is 460,000 unique visitors per month across the whole of southeastern New South Wales, predominantly in Canberra. Obviously, you've got a population of 400,000 in Canberra, but all of the major surrounding centres. And what we're doing is it's a kind of hybrid version of not the hyper-local journalism that you'll hear about from Carol in a moment, but it's solid, right down the middle of the barrel, central journalism. We talk about everything that matters to this community, but we don't go outside this community. We don't run syndicated content. We don't run a lot of federal politics unless it's about what's going on here with our readers. We talk about local government a lot in the ACP, but also in the surrounding shire councils. We've got a finger on the pulse of what's happening locally in a way that's very connected. I'm frustrated intensely and continuously by helicopter coverage of local issues when it strikes the national agenda, the likes of the Eden Monaro election coverage, which vastly has missed the point all the way through.
How?
Look at Eden Monaro, enormous stoush that made the national papers. Everyone's focused on, you know, does John Barilaro go up and challenge Michael McCormick for the National Party leadership? You know, what happens to the Andrew Constance in this enormous battle? If you're sitting on the ground, people are going, well, look, you're first of all missing a very strong local ALP candidate. There's another likely Liberal candidate who almost won the seat, came within a whisker only 6 months ago. You're ignoring the fact that the Greens have got real strength in the south of the electorate. You're misunderstanding the diversity of the electorate as a whole and what will matter to them. You're all hyped on what these blokes are doing up on the hill. And, of course, none of it came to anything. We've got three women candidates running for the Liberals, the ALP and the Greens. None of them figured in any of that. Those are the stories I want to tell.
Your readers, I gather, are sort of 18 to 65-year-olds. I mean, that's a very interesting story you tell. The older readers who can't or won't go online, where are they?
Look, I think this is actually the one fly in the ointment for us. We are certainly conscious, and as somebody who lives in rural New South Wales myself, I'm conscious that there is in many regional communities a number of older and, can I say, probably poorer people too, who are really digitally impoverished. I think that's the crisis here, that we risk real disenfranchisement.
So you've lost them, have you?
Look, not here in Canberra so much, because this is a prosperous community and people are largely very well connected. And judging by the comments, they're right out there pounding their keyboards. But I think certainly that's a risk in smaller communities for sure, that you do deny a voice and a sense of connection. And I think there's also a very deep emotional connection to getting the Cootamundra Herald, the Hardin Murrumburra Express, the Braidwood Times sort of in your hand from the newsagents. And that's definitely where we're losing.
All right, well, Carol, let's hear from you. You're in Warrnambool, which, as you point out, is well-served media-wise. You have a large city paper, a local ABC, a commercial radio station. So what does your operation, the Terrier, I love it, bring to that mix?
Look, I think it comes down to identifying the gaps in your community. And just listening to the conversation so far, I'm just struck by yet again how one size doesn't fit all, even in this conversation, you know, about how the media is going to look in the future. I think each area of Australia is going to be very different, depending on what's already in place and what's moving out and what's moving in. So the gap that I saw when I returned to my hometown was just what Genevieve was talking about, was the depth. Any sort of serious investigative work or just taking a closer, longer, deeper dive into a story was not happening for the very reasons which Genevieve explained, you know, death by a thousand cuts to our local newsroom. So that was the first thing. The second thing was I discovered that people wanted me to give them not only the facts about what was happening, but dare I use the big O word, my opinion on it. And then the next step to that was what we might possibly do about it if, in fact, there was something to be done. Environmental issues, for example, come under that umbrella. So through the Terrier, I have identified areas, I suppose, where I could jump in, scratch around, have a bit more of a, you know, a run down the rat hole, literally, and see what I would find. And it was astonishing to me when I first started that I turned up to the local council to lodge a Freedom of Information application, and they hadn't had one, I think, for 7 years. They actually did not know what form to fill out or what to do. That showed me what was going on with our local paper. Now, just that.
Because you'd worked away from Warrnambool, hadn't you? You'd actually,
yes.
You'd had a lot of experience beyond that.
Correct.
Dare I say, are you making any money out of this, or is this a sort of wonderful hobby?
Yeah, look, at the moment, I'm not making, well, I'm making money. I'm breaking even in terms of what I mean by that is I'm making enough to not have to pay for the costs of the website or the searches that I have to do, the FLIs, et cetera, et cetera. How I'm doing that is through a wonderful combination of things. But what I am finding is I started a concept called the tip jar, which I know is not necessarily a new concept, but I didn't want to have donate or subscribe or help, you know, anywhere on the page. I wanted it to become something that if I was serving the community well, that they would in turn reward me with their, you know, with their whatever they could afford, you know. So I don't have a paywall or anything like that. What's ended up happening is I've got some very loyal supporters who keep turning up. And just before the virus hit, like it did everybody, I was really getting some momentum. But of course, with the virus, discretionary spending in the regions has certainly tightened right up. So I'm now looking at, I've just applied for some, you know, some assistance through the government packages and things like that, just to see if I can get through this period and then back onto where I was before things went a little bit.
How often do you publish?
Well, funnily enough, I don't really have a schedule as such. I publish roughly probably two or three times a week, and I have to rely on Facebook to let people know that I've published, because I don't have that presence where I can put out, you know, people look for the Terrier just yet, but it's getting there. But when I do publish, I've noticed that my, you know, the views and the hits back to the page have grown astronomically, largely because I've had a couple of really, really good stories that have made an impact.
What's your proudest moment?
Oh, look, I think there's been probably two very quick ones. One was I cracked open credit card abuse in the council. That's good old bread and butter stuff that we've always looked at, is the misuse of a credit card. Mm. There was that going on in our local council, and the Victorian Ombudsman is now looking into that as we speak. And the second one was that our mayor recorded a video on making sure we stayed home during the virus, and then was caught that night drinking a bin down the street.
Oh, shades of Dominic Cummings.
Exactly. So that sort of stuff is what the terrier, I guess, is not afraid to publish where we can jump in. So I'm enjoying that.
So you sort of, both you and Genevieve, I think, write tub-thumping editorials. Is that right?
Yeah. Definitely. Otherwise, what's the point?
Now, see, Eric, obviously, crikey's also much more opinionated than the, I suppose, old classic generalist newspapers saw themselves as being. In fact, one of the things I think is that we're realising the role that those old generalist newspapers played in the democracy, and they were both local, macro and micro. No one seems to be really calling or yelling for that at the moment.
Well, the whole ecosystem of journalism and news and information has just been transformed, particularly by social media. And I'm not just talking about the economics of it now. And so everyone has a voice and opinions are everywhere and Twitter's everywhere and so on. So that, I think, has required a whole reinvention of professional sort of traditional journalism. And I think that reinvention process is, part way. It's not anywhere near finished. And we're going to see all sorts of quite different, I think, journalism packages in the future.
But is anybody going to represent the sort of dispassionate centre? It seems to me that the profusion of passion, which undoubtedly draws people in, everybody goes to groups with whom they link and share opinions. So you don't have this lovely open square, public square. I'm going to ask you all this question, actually, that you realise is absolutely precious. First to you, Eric.
I totally agree, but I think the genie's out of the bottle. I don't think you can force it back. I think the point is what we started talking about and what we're largely talking about, I think, is what professional journalists do, whether it's, Genevieve and Carol doing it with one or, a small number of people, or whether it's a bigger newsroom. And social media doesn't enter into that domain. I mean, it's just, the loudest voice and the most sort of prejudiced voice.
But I suppose, Genevieve, are you aiming to be that town square? I'm not quite sure you are.
Oh, no, we are. We absolutely aim to be the town square. One of the really things that's really significant about what we've been able to do at Region Media is that we've got the technological capacity to scrape the comments from across all of our social media channels and amalgamate them on the one site. So people who would not normally talk to each other, people from all sorts of different social media platforms will actually be entering into the same discussion with us at the same time.
And you have somebody deputised to do that precisely. That's their job.
Absolutely. We've got that embedded in the way that we run the site, and we've also got somebody employed full-time on the comments. When all the fuss about the Dylan Voller decision and the implications for mainstream media holding up their hands and saying, Facebook's nothing to do with us, we never knew, we are rigorous across Facebook and across all submitted comments at all times. We've got someone on that constantly and three levels of moderation. And my direction to them is to say, I want a rigorous, fair discussion here. I'm not about people being nice to each other. You've got to look out for defamation, obviously. That's a pertinent and huge risk. But I very much want to run a site where people can have a vigorous, informed, intelligent discussion, and they can argue it out among themselves. And that is the best moment, when you become the fulcrum for the community talking to itself.
And Carol, does this ring true to you or not?
Oh, it does. It does. I'm just listening to this thinking, wow, this is fantastic to hear. Absolutely. And I think when I think about the terrier's demographic and who is a terrier reader, there really is such a diverse group of people who get on and discuss and debate and all sorts of opinions. And, of course, they come to the site knowing about my particular views. But once they get that discussion and debate going, we can see that there's a whole range of different opinions and as I say, demographics being represented there. And I absolutely agree with what Genevieve's saying, is that's the role that we should be playing, and I want to play. I think, again, has been missing in regional towns, is a forum and a platform to do that. And it's one of the most exciting, enjoyable parts of it, actually. It's sort of what the point of journalism is all about, I would have thought.
I mean, we haven't touched on this, the very nature of of your changing communities. People don't, I suppose, live in the same place all their lives. They may even feel less invested in the place they live. I wonder, do you think that's been a factor in the decline of local presses, Genevieve?
Look, I don't think so, Geraldine. I think it actually emphasises even more strongly the need for there to be well-informed local journalism. And certainly one of the things that we know is no matter what form of journalism comes in, trust is an absolutely key factor here. And oddly enough, it turns out the disembowelment of the regional media model in recent times has removed that trust, but it's the trust that Google recognises. You know, when you're looking at the... when you're searching for something, the results that come up for us are the Riot Act without regional, because people know that they are trusted sources of content and that the material comes wholly and solely without any syndication from local journalists who are reading those changes. They know that down the coast, for example, there's a whole lot of tree changing and sea changing going on and that demographics have shifted. They know that in country towns, there's been a shift of depopulation and that the old agricultural industries that drove areas are often in decline because of drought and so on and so forth. So I think actually the change in community is the bigger argument for there being people who are really adept and connected and are out there on the street talking to people, getting their tips, participating in their communities. That's the strength of the model.
And finally, Eric, I mean, can you see a business model then where profit is made that would service whatever, maybe new vehicles, into the regions and the outer suburbs or not?
Well, I would have said no a couple of years ago, but what's emerging now, we're right in the middle of it at the moment, is a model that isn't advertising and isn't subscriptions or purely subscriptions, but it's partially through government funding, believe it or not, and funding via Facebook and Google, who are almost at the point, I think, of agreeing that they would provide funding for news journalism, particularly local news journalism, as part of their civic duty.
Wow. So that is about, oh, I've been following that story. You think that's about to happen, do you?
It's getting very close because the federal government has basically mandated. So we're
thanks
right
to Rod
in the middle
Sim.
Of this now. Yeah.
So you involved in negotiations about that, are you?
Well, all publishers, you know, are to a greater or lesser degree. But yes, I am. And, you know, one of the issues is clearly going to be whether if there is going to be funding from the two big platforms, most of it goes on the basis of the size of audience, therefore to the very big two or three publishers, or whether smaller independent publishers actually get a disproportionate share because it's not based on size. It's actually based on what we've just been talking about, which is journalism for local communities.
Oh, how very interesting. Okay, well, that's a work in progress. And I mean, are there going to be new philanthropists emerge? You know, can you imagine someone like Harold Mitchell suddenly saying, well, I'm going to be in this? Is there going to be prestige, Eric, in doing this?
Look, it's tough for philanthropy, especially in a country like Australia where the culture of it isn't that great. It's growing. Because what you need is you need sustained funding, not just one-off grants. And that's what philanthropists tend to do. So you need a mechanism where, you know, journalists are employed, you know, 52 weeks of the year.
Oh, well, that's a watch that space, just to quote a cliche.
Sorry, Geraldine, can I just pop in there? I feel absolutely the urgent need to say that here at Region Media, we have no funding from Google, Facebook or the government of any kind. There is a sustainable economic model, if you understand how to run search engine optimization, that depends on none of those things. And we are funding, we've got 22 full-time employees here and close to 500,000 people reading us every month. Without any of that kind of funding, we're funded entirely.
Right, but you wouldn't say no to it, would you, if it came through?
Look,
would you?
I think that would be a very open question for us, actually. I think we don't have external capital. We're doing this on the basis of understanding the way that that advertising can work through search engine optimization, front-facing clients, but also the back end of what people search for, the services that they're looking for. And we're not funded on any of the things that Eric has suggested, and this is a growing model, an absolutely growing, thriving model.
That's a long way from my old chief of staff speaking about front-facing. Okay, well, look, that's a very interesting conversation. Thank you very much, Eric Beecher, Genevieve Jacobs and Carol Altman.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Thanks, Geraldine.
And Eric is chairman of private media, Genevieve Jacobs, group editor of Region Media, not regional, Region Media, and Carol Altman, editor of The Terrier. And a lot of you have come through with both applause for your local newspapers and sadness. The devastate, like in The Advocate and the Ballina and Byron Shire Echo, devastated about the end of our local papers and hate being forced to go online for local news, as is Marg Deville. So look, we'll keep following. That's really a very important story for Australia, isn't it?